You're listening to the Tennis.com podcast, and here are your hosts, Nina Pantic and Irina Falcone.
Hey everyone, thanks for joining us. I'm Nina Pantic, and I'm joined with my co-host, Irina Falcone.
Hey guys.
This week we're talking about the U.S. Open, because that's all that matters right now. It started this week in New York City, and the most exciting thing, of course, is to see how the American players are going to do. Later in this podcast, we're going to be joined by Andy Roddick. He calls in, and we talk about the fact that he was the last American man to win a Grand Slam, which was the U.S. Open back in 2003, 15 long years ago.
Honestly, when you say 15 years ago, that sounds like a lifetime ago.
It's completely insane. Even he is surprised by it. You'll hear him talk about it later, but he's shocked by it. John Isner, of course, came the closest at Wimbledon, and Roddick actually talks about how during that crazy semifinal match when Isner was playing Kevin Anderson, the commentators would bring up the fact that Roddick is the last guy to win last American guy to win a slam, and Roddick is shocked that this is like that he's still relevant at all.
Well, I mean, he is a Hall of Famer now. I think that is also such a huge asset for his career, you know, to be the last American to have won a Grand Slam, but also be one of the youngest guys to be inducted into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, it's a big week for the Hall of Fame as well. This week is the first time they're introducing fan voting. So the class of 2019, fans can now add their choices, their picks. And, you know, right now that's a pretty great class. There's going to be Yevgeny Kafelnikov, Conchita Martinez. There's Jonas Bjorkman, Sergi Bruguera, Goran Ivanisevic, Thomas Muster, and Mary Pierce, and Li Na, who is a huge fan favorite, especially in China. So I think she might have the fan edge.
I was just going to say, I personally think that she's my pick. She's just been so influential, not only to the game in all over the world, but specifically in China. I mean, you can definitely tell that the amount of money that China is pumping out to get tennis in China, it's just unbelievable. I think it's great. And I wouldn't be surprised if she gets a lot of votes.
Yeah, when you look at the class on paper, she has the least number of slams and the least number of tournament wins as well. But she's, I mean, been a huge, huge part of the game and part of history. So fans can actually now add your votes online starting on this Monday through October 7th, which is going to be fun. Roddick talks about that a lot. He's a huge fan of this. Fitting fan of fans. This week, we're more concerned with the U.S. Open, and Roddick is still relevant because he's the last American guy to win a slam. But I think Isner's chances are pretty good. He's got a pretty great draw. On tennis.com, we do expert picks each slam, take it or leave it. Sometimes we're really, really off, but sometimes we get it right. And when we added a question this time asking which American will go the farthest, and pretty much everyone chose Isner. Well, I chose Francis Tiafoe.
Way to be the exception, Nina, but you know what? That's a great pick. To be honest, Francis has been having a great hard court season. Not taking anything away from John. Obviously, he's playing some of his best tennis, but Francis is young, up and coming. He has got nothing to lose. He's out there having fun. You can tell the support system that he's got. I saw his mom, his girlfriend. They were both cheering him on in Toronto, and he was just looking like he was having a great time out there, which is so important in the game, especially for a youngster to be having that much fun. That's awesome.
It's crazy how young he is, because he's with his girlfriend, as you said, on tour a little bit this summer, because she's still a student at UCLA and plays for the team there. I mean, that's how young they are.
Wow. Children.
Literally children. He's a lot of fun, and I like his explosive game. And he also had some really, really close calls at the U.S. Open. Last year, he lost in five sets to Federer. The year before, he lost in five sets to Isner. I mean, Isner is still kind of the obvious favorite, just because his game and everything suits so hard to the U.S. Open series. He's won five Atlanta Open titles, for example. But how tough is it to be, you know, the pros and cons of being an American player at an American home slam? I mean, the hype is so, so insanely strong around any American on any court at the U.S. Open.
I will say that the pressure is on. Whether or not you think it or whether or not you see it, I'm sure that Americans are definitely feeling it. Just look at John, for example, Sloan, Madison, Coco, all these players. There's so much expected out of them. And, you know, obviously some of them can handle it better than others. But as a fan, as a tennis commentator, as an American tennis commentator, you want Americans doing well. So the pressure is definitely on.
And while Roddick is the last American male to win a slam, last year we had four American women semifinalists at the U.S. Open. It was absolutely historic with Sloan getting the win, obviously, in the end. But having four women from the U.S. in the final, I mean, that was huge. It could easily be repeated again this year.
I wouldn't be surprised. There's so many good American women playing right now that I can see a lot of them getting deep into the second week, and I'm excited to see who's going to win it this year.
It's nice to have so many players you can kind of watch and keep an eye on, but especially, you know, the hype and the build up to the US Open is so big. I don't think people realize what goes into the week before. There's qualifying, of course. There's 4 days of qualifying, but there's all these events. There's sponsor events, there's endorsement, Nike, you know, Wilson, Yonex. There's player parties, there's all these like charity things going on, and the players are expected to be at certain events, and you know, there's media around and that. The hype is just insane. But Taste of Tennis to me was the most fun last week because you can kind of see how crazy fans and guests at this party go for certain players. You had Sloane Stephens on the red carpet, you had, you know, Kevin Anderson walking the, or the blue carpet I should say, Kevin Anderson, but then Serena and Venus Williams, they actually snuck in through the back door, hopped up on stage, and they were like the surprise celebrity guests. And you can see how much they've done for the sport because they're a little bit above the rest, I guess, in a way, just because of celebrity status. But you know, last year it was Sloane Stephens that won it all, not Serena, not Venus.
Serena has been so influential, not only her entire career, but I'm talking about most recently with speaking about her struggles becoming a new mother and just her success. I mean, a year ago she was not playing tennis, she was in the middle of her pregnancy, to come back a year later and get to the finals of Wimbledon. I mean, are you kidding me? How amazing is that? Just last week I saw that she had her own pop-up shop and she was promoting her line. I believe it's just called Serena. And I saw that Carly Kloss, you know, made her appearance there, which was so cool. She really is awesome. She is Serena.
So while main draw begins this week, last week Tennis Channel was covering the qualifying for the first time ever. So you could see all the big, there were some huge names in qualifying. There was, you know, the Jeannie Bouchard, Tommy Robredo, Patty Schnieder, Feras Vonareva, and then of course young players as well getting their first chance to be on this big Tennis Channel. You know, you're being broadcasted around all over the place, and you're getting that media attention, and you're getting that the real feel as if you're in the main draw, while usually qualifying is kind of secret, tucked away, and no one has any way to watch it.
I thought it was amazing that Tennis Channel took it upon themselves to promote qualifying as much as they did. And Eric Buderak did a great job with really initiating this whole fan week. So as a fan, you'd come in and you would get a notification when Fed was playing, when Sharapova was playing, when Nadal was playing. So not only could you watch the qualifiers that were up and coming, but you can also watch the top players as well, which is, you know, obviously you want to see your favorites. But I thought it was great to have the qualifiers have so much media attention. I saw Francesca Di Lorenzo, first time qualifying for the U.S. Open. She was on Tennis Channel with Brett Haber and Shelby Rogers. They were talking about her match, and I thought that was so cool because before then, she probably wouldn't have been able to get that much attention on screen.
The exposure is huge for them, and having the practice of doing media like that and coming on set after playing a match. I mean, it takes practice to be comfortable doing that, and I think it's awesome and fun for fans to get to watch it all and be taking it so seriously. But Shelby Rogers she was commentating and she was on set and doing studio work and stuff, Tennis Channel, because she's injured. And it's kind of something Tennis Channel's been doing a bit. They had Bethany Maddox Sands last year on set and doing all types of work for them. And then before that, they had Sloane Stephens, of course. So it's cool to have a player that's so like immersed in the sport and actually very actively still playing. It sucks for her that she's injured, of course, but she gets to still be so immersed and so involved and a part of the tennis family that she's built.
If anything, it's just helping her career post-tennis, because she has gotten so good with the commentating. It's just opening so many doors. And I think that commentating training is just so great as a tennis player, because you know the game, you know what those players are going through, and you can talk about it because you've been there.
Exactly. You can understand what's going on, and the players can relate to you a little better, and they're a little bit more excited to talk to you because they know a familiar face. Who knows what they're talking about? So someone else who knows what they're talking about is Andy Roddick. He is our guest this week. Really happy to have him on. And he talks about the Hall of Fame, of course, and the fan voting, because that just started on Monday, but also about the US Open and a little bit about what he's up to and what he's going to be doing in September with one Roger Federer. So we're going to launch right into that. Thank you for your time. I really appreciate it.
No, thank you.
So let's start with obviously the Hall of Fame. It's been a year since you were inducted. When you look back on that day, how special is it and what do you remember the most?
Oh, gosh. I think a pretty consistent theme, which was true then and is true now, was just kind of being able to share that moment with all the people who kind of helped get you there. It was great. One of the weirder parts is that Brooke was pregnant at the time. So looking back, it seems like a lifetime ago with our 9-month-old daughter, she's actually here. but it was just great. And the champions that were there, kind of welcome you into the fraternity of the Hall of Fame was really cool. And it was just a weekend full of great memories and catching up with old friends.
Did you feel a lot of nerves when you had to go and give the speech as opposed to maybe when you gave a champion speech or any kind of speech to do with your tennis career? Was there a different level of nerves in this situation?
Yeah, because I think it was a challenge for me, just because you're given a finite amount of time to try to put into words what everyone might have meant to you, what the game of tennis might have meant to you. So it's like you do something for 30 years and then you have 30 minutes to talk about it. So a minute a year isn't much in the grand scheme of it. So I certainly felt not pressure from anyone else, but just pressure on myself to kind of get it right. You want people to leave after your speech kind of having an understanding of why it's important, how it's important, who's important. So it was a tall task for me, especially trying to connect the fan version of myself, at 7, 8, 9 years old, to the person who actually got to play the game, on the biggest stages. So that was, that was the part that I wanted to kind of, connect and try to figure out how that became real at some point.
Do you, these days, do you feel a thrill when you hear the word, the words Hall of Famer associated with your name?
Yeah, it's really nice. It really is. Anytime. I played an event last night in Winston-Salem, and even during intros, it gets said, and the crowd reacts a certain way, and it really is just nice, and it's completely self-serving and completely selfish, but it does feel great. and it's one of those things where you don't get it for just a little bit. You have it forever. So it is a great honor, and it's not as if I've gotten used to it because time has passed. And, I think that'll probably be the case for the rest of it.
I think a lot of fans get clued in for when the announcement's made for who's going to be inducted and then when the ceremony actually happens. But then what happens afterwards? Do you become a member? Is there, membership emails? Is there membership fees? Do you get to vote now for next year right away? How does all that work?
Yeah, you do. Yes, to what you said. I don't think I'm around tennis much, so I probably don't get to see everyone as much as they see each other. But you kind of have an inside look. I knew when the nominees came out last year, you're part of the voting process. At some points you're used as a reference, whether it's criteria or when new initiatives come across, such as the fan voting. So it's really cool to kind of be a part of the most prestigious inner circle that a player can get post career. So the answer to your questions is yes.
That's cool. And then looking ahead, so next year, 2019, is the first time ever they're going to have the Hall of Fame voting option for fans to actually put in their opinions and have a say in maybe who's going to end up chosen. What are your thoughts on this new addition?
I think it's a home run. I think it's awesome. I mean, if you look at if you look at kind of baseball totals when they announce, who gets what percentage of the vote, there is a real opportunity for fans to actually get someone over the hump and get someone in. And it's something that should happen. Our memories are only as great as we remember them because of fan participation, whether it's in a match or at practices or watching us on TV. So there's no reason that should stop when it comes to Hall of Fame. So I think it's a great idea. I think it's a progressive idea. And I applaud the Hall of Fame for taking this step. And I think it's absolutely the right thing to do.
Do you think a lot of people will take part in this?
I hope so. You know, if you feel passionately enough about it, you should. I certainly know if it would have been in place for mine, I by no means was a shoe-in, especially during the first year. So, hell yeah, there's every chance I would have been begging people on Twitter to go vote. So, yeah, I think it also has the potential to kind of form a little bit of a connection between whoever's trying to get in and the fans to kind of help them. I think it is a great opportunity for the players and the nominees to ask for help also. And I think it really puts a bow on that relationship that kind of has existed for a while between player and said fan.
I think partly because you're still so young, you're only in your mid-30s, and partly because you're clued into social media, but you, of all people, kind of still have a connection with your fans, right? Because I see you on Twitter, you know, you did the Periscope thing a few years back, and I feel like you're still really, really engaged. Like, are you still connected to your fans today, maybe as much as you were before when you were playing?
I just don't even know how to answer that. I would say no, but only just because proximity is gone. You know, there's no way to, if a fan wants to come see me and they live close to Cincinnati and come to the tournament, and, you know, I've certainly lost that, but that's one of the benefits of social media is to kind of, it is an easy way to kind of stay connected. And you know, sometimes it's deliberate and sometimes it's spontaneous conversation. Frankly, I think the spontaneous ones are probably more entertaining at times, but it certainly is a tool that is, I feel lucky that it's available to me post-career.
How big was having fan support as an American playing at the U.S. Open? We're kind of around that U.S. Open time, so I have to kind of talk about this as well, but how big was having fans and the support and the pressure as well? There's the pros and cons of being the home favorite, right?
Yeah, sure. I was on both sides of it, frankly. You know, and especially New York crowd it's a lot of things, but it's always just so fair. I remember distinctly when it kind of really turned, 2003, Andre lost the first semi. I was in the second semi and I wasn't doing so well. And the fans, I think, wanted an American presence in the final. And I happened to be that guy because Andre was no longer an option in that tournament. You know, and that lasted, you know, the better part of a decade after that. And so it was a huge deal. Especially 2006, the run of the final, I remember Connor's just telling me to use the fans and they'll respond. And he was right. And he was the master of it. And then to kind of counter those 2 years, 2005, I completely laid an egg first round and they weren't real happy with me, and that's fair. You know, so I think the New York fans, especially, super passionate, but always fair. And, you know, they help create some of the best memories. You know, one of the best memories of my lifetime wasn't specific to the U.S. Open, but Wimbledon, after I lost the tough final, the fans really kind of picked me up immediately in the aftermath of it. You know, by kind of supporting me and saying my name, and, you know, that they create those magical moments that you'll always remember.
And your name is still really, really huge with American tennis, you know, for the good and the bad in this case. But did you ever imagine that you would still be today the last American man to win the slam?
No, certainly not. And I hope it changes. You know, it is still strange. You know, all of a sudden, you know, I'm up in a little mountain town we spend time in that has two stoplights and watching Wimbledon coverage. And, you know, during semis and John's match, it's still a relevant topic, which is amazing to me. And it's something that, you know, not because of any sort of bitterness, just I'd like to see, you know, someone come through. You know, I wish it wasn't still a storyline. You know, and it is strange, but you know, that's sports. It goes in waves. And, you know, that's the reason why it's the best theater, is because it's not easy to just apply a script to it. You know, but I do think when that breakthrough comes, it'll mean that much more. And, you know, I just think as American tennis fans, and I certainly grew up in this generation, we were just spoiled in the best possible way for so long, you know, from the beginning, you know, and then through Arthur Ashe and Stan Smith and then Mack and Connors and then Pete and Andre and Chang and Courier, you know, it was just a spoil. We were just spoiled in the best possible way. And it's, you know, hopefully we'll certainly appreciate it when that comes again.
We were definitely spoiled. You mentioned Wimbledon, so then I got to mention Roger Federer. But in this case, you're actually going to be—he's going to be part of the Q&A with you in Texas on September 17th, benefiting your foundation. How did that come together?
I asked nicely. You know, Roger and I, you know, obviously we don't see each other that much anymore, but I think we've always had a healthy respect. You know, he kind of went out of his way during our careers. If I was getting, you know, any sort of criticism, he was always one of the first ones to kind of back me up. And it was certainly something that I always appreciated. And I'm happy to tell people how he is as a human, which is as you would want him to be. You know, he's certainly a hero to tennis fans everywhere. And he's the guy you'd want him to be. You know, and so I kind of went through Tony Gottsick and just said, hey, is this a possibility at any time? You'd let us know it works. And, you know, in my mind, I was thinking maybe on the kind of cross country trip from Indian Wells to Miami next year, or, you know, trying to make it as easy as possible. And you know, they threw out the September 17th date, which is amazing because it's obviously on the heels of the U.S. Open and before Labor Cup. So there's a huge amount of relevancy in the tennis season. And, you know, the thing about the tennis world and Roger's certainly in line with it is that there's such a great culture of saying yes and then working backwards from there to figure out the logistics. So it's a huge deal. Everyone in Austin, I mean, we've had big acts for the foundation. We've had Elton John and people are really excited about him coming to Austin, Texas. And it's really cool to see. It's like my two universes colliding for a day. And then Mary was amazing too. Mary Carrillo, I called her and I said, we're doing this thing. You know, I'd like to explain it to you. She goes, oh, that's fine. Whatever it is. Yes, I'm in. And it was that easy. And you know, I think that speaks to the culture in tennis. And I certainly feel lucky to be a part of it.
It's going to be an awesome event for a really great cause. I think it's cool to have a big name, but to have you being a part of something like that is also great because people are still so obsessed with you. What's your relationship like with the sport now? Do you still play regularly? Are you still locked in?
I'm not. I would say I'm pretty removed. I played I played an event last night, and I think it was the third or fourth time this year that I had played. Unfortunately, it was funny when our kids came around, I started playing a lot less. So we're coming up on 3 years old and we'll have another birthday later on in November. So, you know, my wife she's become a really impressive businesswoman. So she travels a little bit. And, you know, we kind of juggle schedules and it doesn't always lend itself to being able to camp out in front of a TV and watch a lot of tennis and or play a lot of tennis. That's something that I'd like to see remedied, you know, over the next bit of time. And I hope I can start playing a little bit more, but I enjoy it. I still love watching when I can. It's just not something that kind of dictates my day-to-day operations and life right now.
Maybe you'll play with your kids right when they get old enough.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what he's more interested in, like gardening and working with tools right now.
Yeah, and just on that note, lastly, how did life change to go from a family of three to family of four, not including the dogs, of course?
Yeah, it's a lot. You know, Brooke and I haven't, you know, I know I retired from tennis, but have stayed extremely busy with the foundation and different business ventures. And so it forces you to be extremely organized about scheduling. And, you know, I think there's only been one or two nights with the kids where one of us hasn't been home. So that's important to us. And, you know, it's your schedule's not really your own anymore and it's in a great way. And the kids are just amazing. And, you know, we're obviously very biased, but we just think they're the greatest. And, it's a different life than the one I used to live.
Of course. Okay. Well, I think that is time's up, but I really appreciate you taking time to talk with us and talk about fan voting and about your experiences as well.
Yeah, I appreciate you. Thank you.
All right, guys, that was Andy Roddick. That's it for this episode of Inside Tennis. I'm Nina Pantic, and my co-host Arina Falcone is also signing off.
Officially signing off, you guys. See you next week.
Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week.
You've been enjoying the Tennis.com podcast. For all the latest news and events, head over to Tennis.com.